Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your first speaker for today. Thank you, Barry Mandinack. Please go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Barry Mandinack. I'm the head of distribution at Virtus Investment Partners. Today's call is the last of our three-part series, Volatility and Prospective Market Update Calls. I'm pleased to be joined today by Matt Benkendorf, the Chief Investment Officer of Vontobel Asset Management and the Portfolio Manager of the Virtus Vontobel Global Mutual Funds. We have been witnessing a market panic as the continued spread of the coronavirus is threatening a global recession. The impact on global equity markets has been severe in recent weeks, as we all have experienced. And combined with the oil price war that was going on, volatility has been pretty high and escalating. So our discussion today is going to center around volatility and what investors can expect in the coming weeks and months. And so I wanted to welcome you all for joining us today, and I wanted to also welcome Matt. Matt, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Barry. Thanks for having me. Thanks, everybody, for joining.
Okay. What I thought we would do is kind of kick it off with the first question that you know, everybody wants to know is, how did you do from the market peak through the end of the first quarter, and what's your perspective on that particular performance, and we'll go from there. So thanks, Matt.
Sure. Yeah, no, sounds good, Barry. I think it's a good way to set the table here to start. I think a lot of you out there are probably investors in our fund and are aware tick-by-tick NAV day-by-day, but for those that aren't and for those of you who are, let me give you a little more color here. You look over, across the major products we have here at Virtus Investment Partners, emerging markets, global equity, international equity, and then our little but lesser-known European equity product. The performance has been similar. You know, as with the benchmark and most competitors out there, we have suffered in the down market. Emerging markets were more or less down in line with the index as we finished the quarter and off the peak. Global equity, we've delivered some relative outperformance so far in this downdraft. International equity, some relative outperformance as well, but in an absolutely declining market. And European equity, also some relative outperformance in an absolutely declining market. And what that it signals is just basically the usual, actually. So while we're in this sort of unprecedented virus issue as opposed to a normal recession, financial crisis, tech bubble burst, whatever you want to define it as, we've more or less gotten a lot of the similar behavior. And then a couple things are different indeed. So the similar behavior I'll talk about first, particularly in emerging markets. So why is there a little bit more relative outperformance so far? And we have to realize how early we are here, really. I mean, I think because we've all been locked up at home more or less, this feels like the longest month or quarter we've ever experienced in our lives. We're not that far in here, right? We're basically a couple of hard weeks in here. And what you typically get during an initial fall off is pretty indiscriminate selling. It just is what it is. You know, high quality, low quality. A lot of the indicators going in as people labeled stocks just aren't very predictive early on. You know, I could give you a whole litany of companies that are very low beta companies that have fallen well in excess or at least in line with the market as well. And that's not surprising because the market in a sell-off has nothing to base anything on. There's not a lot of information, particularly given this issue, too. There is not a whole lot of visibility anywhere right now in the immediate term, and there's a whole lot of panic thrown on top of it. I think the slightly better relative performance in global, international, Europe versus emerging markets so far, well, I think the pattern is exactly the same and will continue to get better for all of the products. I think it's probably just signaling a little bit more efficiency in those markets. I think the emerging markets are what they are. I think it takes a little bit further along for the wheat to get separated from the chaff. I think people have to deal with first initially a lot of the other exogenous fears that come along with the sell-off, not just the micro of what's going on with companies, but people get very fearful of the macro and emerging in particular and what's going on in whole economies. So the indiscriminate selling can be a little bit worse. But more or less, you know, to give you some comfort, the pattern is rather predictable, even though we're in a very different scenario with this virus. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit yet. If you look at one anomaly, I would say right now, that's a little bit different, which is important, I think, you know, to tell you something different maybe that you're not used to hearing by now, getting beaten over the head with the either the TV or the market information written or calls like this. What's interesting is some of the dynamics within quality right now. So while the general pattern, I think we're pretty confident, is normal, more or less to this point, some areas of quality have been a little bit more disproportionately hurt even early on this time around, which will normalize, certainly. But what do I mean by that? Certainly where we find some areas of quality, and I don't think a lot of people would quibble with it, where you have some very high underlying economic returns, good long-term structural growth, et cetera, can be in the consumer-facing space. They can be branded products. They can be high-quality services. But those are areas varies because of the nature of the current downdraft being this virus-related, social distancing-oriented, quarantined. They're certainly suffering more disproportionately than, or not just disproportionately, more relative. They're just suffering like they wouldn't in a normal recession because people are locked down. We understand that. I'll talk about that a little bit later in terms of how we address that from a research and investment standpoint. But there are some areas early on that are different this time around. Doesn't change our conviction in those companies, but it's just the nature of it. You know, there's some consumer-oriented companies, and even within the consumer-oriented companies, I'd say also what's interesting in terms of sector dichotomy right now, even within staples, for example, I'd say a lot of the companies that are the much better medium and long-term investment companies are suffering a lot more shorter term, and a lot of the companies in staples that are probably your poor medium or longer term opportunities are doing a lot better in the short run, which is interesting and creates a lot of investment opportunity. And so what do I mean by that? One area you probably know we typically like is alcohol and beer as one area of alcohol. And because of the complete shutdown of on-trade or at the bar or restaurant consumption, obviously was suffering in the near term. And some of those stocks have been weaker. Some areas that have been stronger happen to be in some of the food spaces, but in some of the food spaces, I'd argue that you have a much lower quality long-term investment proposition with respect to private label competition, the hollowing out of the center aisle of the grocery stores, and all these other negative long-term structural dynamics. But they're doing very well short-term because of this front-end loaded pantry stocking, because of the pandemic and the fear there. So that's kind of interesting here in performance. I think the other area in emerging markets where you look at why we're not quite where we are in the other products at this point in time, but I'm very confident we'll get there, is China. And not just China, but banks. So the interesting thing here, although China was the front runner of the issue and the epicenter, and Chinese banks will be forced to shoulder, you know, the load there going forward and will continue to be even worse institutions than they are historically, both China as a region and country and the banks in China as one area within financials have been relative outperformers to this point. And it's also along the same vein where I'd say what's doing well short-term is maybe not the best medium and long-term place. Now, I wouldn't say that blanket for everything in China, A, to separate that. We have some really great businesses in China. We've got 24-odd percent of the portfolio in China. We've got some great domestic stories there. But generally speaking, China as a whole, even low quality and average quality, has held up really well. And I don't think people have completely thought through the cycle there yet. And the banks in particular have been a bit stronger there. So hopefully I give you a little bit of color of what's a little bit different here. I think you can understand why medium and longer term, I think we feel much better with what we hold that might be doing a little bit relatively poor early days here. But look, we're in the early innings here of this quality versus low quality playing out. We feel really confident in what we have. We've been upgrading the portfolio. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I think that gives you some broad brushstrokes on performance so far.
No, thank you, Matt. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit more about this. I've heard a lot of this, and it can sound a little bit self-promotional, if you will, and I don't want to do that at all, but I just want your views. There's a thought that the last decade has been largely about a rising tide lifts all boats, really kind of a shift towards passive, and it didn't really matter about the quality of a company. If it was a risk asset, it was going up and people bought into it. But there's some thinking that given what's happened here in the market decline, that there's a greater focus on winners and losers and selectivity, and that things like the debt that a company has, the quality of the balance sheet, the strength of the balance sheet, the durability of the earnings growth, those things may be coming more into focus. Is it your view that there is a shift in the mindset that's taking place?
Yeah, I think there's two pieces to that, Barry. I think one, it's the proposition that our style has, A, uniquely, and then B, it's the competition versus passive, and I would say other competition, not just passive, that we face. I think on the passive element, I think your characterization is right, and I think a lot of people out there probably align with that or sympathize with that, you know, in that, look, it's been rather easy, quite frankly, for a long period of time, generally speaking. I mean, it's been very hard in certain pockets and certain periods, but look, a rather accommodative, stable, low volatility backdrop is pretty good, and it sort of leads to potential dislocations we're now seeing now and panic when the tide shifts. So I think that's one issue that is definitely changing. I think even within competitive sets of what is quality, I think the word's still thrown around a lot and has been thrown around even more incrementally over the past decade, and now you're about to see a little bit more clearly in the coming quarters. You haven't seen it yet by any means. You'll see it in the coming quarters yet, what is quality and what isn't quality really, because because I think the words just really become, you know, just overused, and everything is sort of described now as quality. And it's not because people are being disingenuous. It's because, to your point, it's been harder to distinguish, really, because the playing field out there has been a bit easy. So everything kind of looks like it's playing above its real potential, or its real normalized, I'd say, potential. So I think that element will normalize. I think better managers versus worse managers, as this continues to roll forward, not yet, you're not going to see it yet, but as it continues to roll forward, I think you'll see that. I think you're going to see the dislocation in the passive vehicles already. We can talk about that when we talk about what we're doing day-to-day in the portfolio, but I'm glued to my seat. I mean, I am like a kid in a candy store right now, because the intraday volatility is amazing, both at the portfolio level and individual stock level right now, because the machines are out there and they're active, and they're responding and doing some funky things right now. So that's kind of interesting. I think back to point A, what we offer as a proposition is exactly the same it's always been, actually. And I think a lot of you who have been with us out there understand that. So I can assure you it's the same. And for those who aren't familiar, to understand, this is basically it. We offer a much narrower set of real, better, higher quality businesses, as indicated in their underlying economic returns, their long-term growth prospects, the stability of their long-term growth, their enduring power, i.e. their sustainability through even crises like this to survive. They will survive and they will thrive out of difficulty. That's manifested in our long-term portfolio characteristics. So while a lot of people use a lot of those words still too, the proof, as grandma would say, is in the pudding. So you look at our numbers, our long-term numbers on all of our products, they're very characteristic of the terminology here, i.e. high Sharpe ratios, high downside capture potential ratios, high ratings and Sortino ratio, and long-term relative outperformance and compounding, and also, as indicated, in lower volatility over time, given that the underlying businesses throughout and over the course of full economic cycles have lower volatility. So the proposition is there, as it always has been. I think in times like this, as we continue to roll through this, you'll start to feel it more and understand it better. And I think it's always still the best proposition, period. So whether or not, you know, indexes or index vehicles really fall by the wayside or just fall a little bit by the wayside, whether or not our competition, to what magnitude it falls by the wayside, I still think we have the winning formula. And as I said, the proof is in the pudding, in that, you know, the bulk of my own net worth and our investment team are also in these products alongside our clients. So we're obviously firm believers, and we're rewarded and have been rewarded for being firm believers in our own long-term investment results. So yeah, the proposition is there, and this is probably a good reminder of it. Albeit this is, you know, this is certainly an interesting time, given the nature of what we're dealing with right now.
So Matt, speaking of interesting times, as a consequence to this whole unprecedented event, are you finding opportunities to add to positions that previously might have been too expensive for you? Are you thinking about the way life is going to change post-crisis and trying to look for companies that stand to benefit from that? Is there any changes to the portfolio of consequence that you foresee or are making that are based on what's happening in the world?
Yeah, I think there's two things going on right now, which are also pretty typical, right? So we've been, you know, more or less riding our horses that are our portfolios and making incremental changes along the way. And then when you get shakeouts like this, you really get a chance to look at your cards and look what the market's dealing you in terms of other potential cards and form a new hand. And the only reason you do that is if you can form a better hand than what you had. We think we had a really good hand, but now when some other aces come out of the deck, that starts to look interesting. And that's, I think, our job always, to take the capital our clients have entrusted to us, play the absolute best hand we have that the market's giving us within our style, and to deliver the long-term winning outcomes we'll get. But, you know, now we're getting new cards, and that's why, as I said, I'm like a kid in a candy store, and you have to be glued to these markets every day, because there's some absolutely interesting things showing up for you. So what are the driving goals in all this? Two things. One, we're always trying to upgrade quality on one hand if we can, you know, i.e. what does that mean? Getting to higher return, higher underlying long-term normalized earnings growth businesses, flat out better, more durable, predictable businesses if we can get them on the margin too as well. And two, as opposed to riding the same horses, I think as a lot of you have been with us understand for a while, our portfolios, I always use this analogy, are like a coiled spring. in that the when you own great businesses who compound their earnings to higher sustainable levels over long periods of time, when you go through market drawdowns, i.e. stock prices go down but earnings don't go down proportionally, the potential investment returns in the portfolio start to compress a bit like a spring, which is great. It's great for your money coming out of it, and it's also great if you rebalance your portfolios during it and add more into these compressed springs. What also goes on now is even while our existing spring has been compressing because the stocks are going down but the businesses are still strong and will continue to grow over the medium and long term, we can also, as we upgrade quality, upgrade more growth, as I alluded to as well, into the bounce of the spring. And that's what's been interesting in the earlier part, which might hurt a little bit earlier, where just right away there's indiscriminate selling. It's why I'm not complaining about it, indiscriminate selling right now, because I like it. Indiscriminate selling is what gives us opportunity. I wouldn't want the selling to be discriminating right now, because then the market would not be giving me the inefficiencies we always thrive on. So it's great that the market's not thinking medium and long term right now. And that's where the portfolio activity is really centered around. And one other nuance right now, too, I would say, that's going on is when you look at the nature of this issue, right? So there's the same general playbook as our playbook. But this time around, there's a slight nuance in it, in that normally you're entering into recession, and we have no crystal ball and we're not top-down, so you don't know. Is the recession going to be a 12-month issue? Is it going to be an 18-month issue? What's it going to be? There was some dislocation that caused the recession, or something happened, right, from a normal economic sense, and now you need that to be fixed, more or less, or the healing to happen. Because of the abnormality of this, that is just sort of a government-induced wet blanket that's been thrown on what was otherwise a rather good economy and improving economies, generally speaking, in the emerging markets. What that does actually in this drawdown is it's given us a little bit more of an opportunity on the margin, I wouldn't say wholesale, where we're willing a little bit more this time sometimes to sell off even some of our own stuff that's more durable and held up a little bit better. And as I've called it, roll down in the portfolio towards some of the other stuff we already own or would like to own that's sold down harder to get more of this compressed spring coming out of it. And now it might sound intuitive, but it is a different nuance to understand, because in a normal recession, the last thing you want to do early in is really pick your flowers hard and water your weeds, as they say, so to speak, even in a quality garden. You really want to hold the flowers because you're early in. You're early in and you don't know, actually. And I'm not saying I know now how long this is going to drag out, but the normal dislocations that cause recession, the healing period is a little bit more indeterminate. Because we've got such an abject shutdown of the economy here, which we know with some sense of visibility, 3, 6, 9, whatever it is, because it's a viral issue and the virus will run its course, and obviously it's going to have its negative detrimental health impacts, and I'm not touching upon that. I'm talking from a pure investment standpoint. Because we know that issue will roll off, and because we know at the same time we've had tremendous fiscal response and monetary response, I'm a little bit more willing here in this drawdown to improve the upside of the portfolio a little bit more with this roll down activity here. So I think coming out of this, honestly, I'm hoping we have an even better portfolio in terms of bounce too.
That's great. Operator, I'd like to open it up for questions, please.
Yeah, Barry, maybe while we're waiting there, just to give you one other second, if you're not all tired of hearing, let me just add a little bit more color onto what I was just talking about in broad sense, right, in terms of what we're doing. So I kind of talked a little bit about the fundamentals there. If you look at emerging, for example, right, and how our exposure has changed on the margin in this downdraft here, our discretionary exposure has come up a bit, right? To give you some color, I can't speak precise names here. We will at a later date when you start to see the disclosure, but that's up. IT, some of the good IT names even incrementally in the emerging space specifically, we've been had our eye on, have been a little bit more dislocated. So that exposure's come up. We funded that a little bit with a trim back in some of our financials exposure, so that's sort of offset that. In global, similar. Actually, in global, international, and emerging, a little bit similar theme in that discretionary exposure across the board has been an area where we've seen a little bit more of this dislocation we've been willing to take advantage of. IT a little bit too as well in global. International going into this, our staples exposure was a little bit lighter relative in some of the other products and where it could be. So actually that has come up a little bit just in the international portfolio sphere specifically. So those are kind of what you'd think from what I said intuitively, where we're seeing things.
Okay, let's just get to the questions if we can.
You do have a question from the line of John Schmidt.
Yeah, hi. Can you zoom out a little bit? I mean, I think the portfolio stuff is interesting, but I think I'm probably more interested in sort of as an asset class, what the prognosis is. So where were we in the emerging market cycle before all this hit? Obviously, the dollar went through the roof, which really hurts emerging markets. You know, where do we go from here?
Yeah, no, good question. Look, obviously with emerging as opposed to the other products, the macro comes more into play in the backdrop. So thanks for kind of clarifying that. It would help out here. Look, emerging, we were in a really good place, right, going into there, I think, you know, in terms of timing. We had suffered and we were in a good place in terms of recovery. Why were we in a good place? Let's start there. One, you had in certain places some really good structural reforms going on. And this is a little bit self-serving in terms of its focus on where we are in emerging markets. So take that with a grain of salt, my answer in terms of Brazil, right, for one, where we have and you have, if you're invested with us, portfolio exposure. Brazil was going through some very important long-term structural reforms to the economy there, which is great. And that's the long-term development added story in emerging markets, right? You can buy really great businesses and really great businesses that are growing that give you real attractive returns long-term back even in your U.S. dollar currency. But the added gooser, I would say, on top of great businesses is you get better underlying backdrops as the economies develop, which helps over a long period of time. You get less and less volatility, et cetera. So Brazil, for one example, the economy was certainly moving forward in terms of structural reforms. India as well. India was also going through a period, and there you were seeing a slowdown. So India has swung around a little bit. The long-term structural reforms have been in place and moving forward. You had seen better growth and then a slowdown of growth, but we were looking for that to start to now recover and come through that. So generally speaking, you know, two big economies were exposed to in emerging markets going in. You were in a good place, I think, and incrementally going forward, you're going to be in a better place. Areas like China, I think you're more or less in the same place. You were seeing a movement more domestically towards a consumption-oriented economy. That's also what mattered to us. That's where our exposure is in China. That I don't think either has really changed. I could talk about where I see some greater risk going forward going in the other half of the economy, the manufacturing and export sector. I think there are issues there longer term, but and we're going in, but those aren't our concerns specifically. So that's more or less the same. I think the good news in emerging markets going in too as well is you had lower inflation, generally speaking, which is important in emerging markets because it allows central banks to do more. So you were actually had the ability going into this of central banks, which were already in India, they were responding to a growth slowdown and the central bank was being more accommodative. In Brazil, they also had that flexibility going in and were being more accommodative. So central banking in emerging markets, which is always a question mark in some economies there, but generally speaking, most of them have gotten a whole lot better. And the ones we're invested in, where obviously have a lot of confidence in the central banking acumen there and track record, they were in good shape. Now going in, there's some pluses and minuses now. So that's where we were. Where we are now because of the virus, this is what's going to be interesting. You know, one in China, I would argue, as I said, the domestic side will be up fine. I think they'll have exaggerated issues coming out of it. The areas we're generally not invested in as repercussions of the current crisis that we're facing right now. I think there'll be a whole lot more reexamining of what was already being reexamined going in. I think that's fairly safe to say. I think the returns will still be there, though, for the great domestic-oriented businesses. I'd be a lot more worried about the others, though. I think the good sort of Asian tech companies will also be in good shape still. I think Brazil, they've got a lot more freedom now. I think the economic reforms continue there. The central bank has been responsive there, too, also even in the midst of a weakening currency, also in India, too, as well. So the response is there. I think you're probably prone to be transparent with you to see worse news in terms of the health epidemic there, obviously. India, Brazil, very large economies, underdeveloped healthcare systems, to state the obvious, rather young populations, which will be the good news. But in some of these emerging markets economies, because they are, quite frankly, emerging, and I think even in our own developed economy in Italy, we're asking ourselves how developed we are in terms of some of this basic infrastructure we think is there. But in these economies, right, they're going to fall short to some degree there. So I think the headline news in terms of health, obviously, is going to be difficult, but it won't be disruptive to the long-term stories of the economies. I think that's the good news there. You know, I think I'm sensitive to, obviously, the health and the life issues there and the toll there, but I think in terms of where these economies have been going structurally, they're in good shape. There's some offsets here in India, too, as well. Lower oil is good for the economy. Even with this spike we had off today and even with an oil price still a fair bit above where we are. The lower oil price is a natural stimulatory impact on the domestic Indian economy, so that's good news there. I think the other piece you mentioned on the dollar is a very important part here, right? That's where you would be normally more worried in past cycles here, I would argue, and personally my own opinion on that is I'm less worried about it here. Why? Because we are being so aggressive here fiscally and monetarily, A. B, because inflation is still relatively in check in a number of these economies, and even so far it's still continued to go lower, even in places like Brazil. So that's allowed the central banks there to also be quite stimulative, and in fact, a number of them now are looking into and are starting to also engage in asset purchases. But I think what the U.S. is doing will be more important to dampen the strength in the dollar here, which obviously, as you pointed out, will be key for emerging markets. So look, net-net, what hasn't changed is it's emerging markets, and it will overall, as an asset class relative to others, be more volatile relative. But the long-term returns have been there, and the higher longer-term returns still will be there because the two basic fundamental tenets are in place. For us, the businesses with the compounding rates we're looking for, A, and B, the development stories will be there. That's what I think, you know, hasn't changed still. You're going to see things tested, certainly, which is what causes the volatility and the higher drawdown there as an asset class. But I think what you've seen in terms of structural progress has been very impressive there. And what you see in terms of the playbooks, we talk about how much we've learned from the playbook here at our own central bank in terms of what's happened before and what we now do more quickly. Also in the emerging markets, right, they have learned a lot too as well. And in fact, in a number of senses, maybe they are a bit smarter than we are in certain spaces. So I think I wouldn't have any hesitation in changing my view, or you shouldn't, in your view of the long-term attractiveness of the asset class here. I think the problem areas, to be clear, too, are still the problem areas. That's not where you are, you know. So I'm not talking to sort of the basket case economies there, clearly, you know. And the developed markets, look, the frontier markets, right? Yeah, look, you know, the frontier markets, you're probably going to be a little bit more hesitant there because you're going to have a two-pronged effect. One, they were frontier markets where there was probably a bit more of a rush in ahead of the horse there, A. And B, a lot of these frontier markets got intertwined with China and could be wrapped up a little bit in some of these Chinese debt issues. So frontier markets, let me be clear, let me separate that from emerging markets.
All right, Matt, I'm going to have to interrupt you so we can get to some other questions. So, operator, other questions?
We do have a question from the line of Steve Angelis.
Hey guys. Thanks for taking the call. I've got two questions, and then I have a comment. But I'll give you the comment first. You know, I'm a little bit concerned about India because things are just starting in India. Now, obviously, there's a lot of people and probably not a lot of testing, so maybe it won't look so bad. But it could get really bad there, and that's a big percentage of at least one of your funds. But the two questions that I have, and maybe you can follow up with on the India piece. First, quarterly earnings are going to be – they're going to miss in the first quarter, second quarter, probably the whole year. You know, we know they're going to miss. However, have the financial markets priced that in? Or are they just going to butcher these stocks when they come out with just horrible earnings, or it just depends on how horrible they are? So that's one question. The second question is, how do you feel about financials? You know, we got low rates that eliminate your dividends by some of these governments, at least in Europe, and now they're starting to talk about that here in the U.S., and then, you know, they're going to have to not take rent from people or delay rent payments. How do you feel about financials?
Yeah, look, all three good questions. Hopefully Barry won't kill me because I'll give you some detailed answers for three, but in a compressed fashion. All right, India first. Look, India, as you know, it's about 14-odd percent of the portfolio. So it's actually considerably less than it has been before. So when we look at India right now, A, from an investment perspective, we're sort of sitting here eager, you know, for further fallout, because there are a number of businesses there we would like to increase exposure back into that we own, or other ones we've owned before we want to add to. So India is going to be a great opportunity for us actually right now. The exposure is decent, I would say, but by no means very large by our own standards or anything. For even from a relative perspective, we're too worried about in the near term right now. I think India, as you said, look, it's going to have, and I kind of wanted to allude to that in some of my comments, it's going to have a rougher ride in terms of healthcare reporting coming out of it. But let's understand, you know, like a million people die of basic things like dysentery. military in India every year, right? I mean, this is a real developing economy, right? So yes, this virus is going to move through, and yes, it's going to have a detrimental impact, but you have a very large population, you have a younger population, generally speaking, which will be more resilient. The death toll, yes, could be large. It's going to be disruptive right now because the government's also doing what we're doing here. It's going to try to shut down to some degree different areas of the economy. I think the one thing you're going to see in emerging markets too, which you're probably going to see at some point in this country, depending on how this rolls forward, is I think in emerging markets on the margin in places like India, you're probably going to see a little bit more of a pragmatic approach, right? Because the risk of killing the economy is even greater. So the bad news is if you're in India, it's unfortunately going to cause the health issue to hit a little bit worse. So one, from our perspective, let me answer concisely, I wouldn't be worried about what we have because what we have, we're in good shape with already. And B, it's going to be an opportunity to increase what we have and buy some more of in India. But look, the headlines will be tough. I think on the Q question, I think is a really great question. I actually, you know, it's psychoanalyzing. Do I think the market's going to be surprised yet? I never have high hopes for the market because it'll always let me down. You know, I sort of would think, as you said, they kind of got some clue here. I think on the margin, maybe there's some room for it to be pleasantly surprised because I think the market underestimates, at least in Q1, as long as it's felt that we've had basically zero revenues and businesses for the whole entirety of the year to this point, right, where really it's been more the last month or less than a month. So, you know, in some ways, I think maybe in some companies, the market might be a little bit presently surprised when it actually sees the number on a piece of paper and goes, oh, they were doing business for maybe 2 or 3 months here and not for three. But look, I don't have high hopes for the market there. I think what the market's going to do and it should do and what we're doing is, A, you got to sort of put a big asterisk on 2020 as it is, and you're looking at 2021 very clearly and where we normalize to in terms of how you value companies. Because in the base year, what are we losing? We're losing maybe if we do a dividend, but the long-term value creation in companies isn't in 2020. It's out 5 years from now for us. And the market, in some degree, as panicked as it is now, will slowly get that. So on the Q, we're going to see also, I think, what the market is shifting towards and will even greatly, where we did already about a month ago, is it's going to worry much less about the quarterly earnings and about the balance sheet very quickly. And it's a fluid situation. So it's not going to be about waiting every quarter. It's about evaluating every week based on the health situation, where the air pockets are in businesses and how wide that gap is still to bridge. So for 4 months, rather than just quality of businesses, predictability of earnings, we've been in the trenches intensively on the balance sheet strength of our companies, not just leverage, but lines of liquidity, flexing revenues down to zero, looking at the room around fixed and variable costs, even in the best and greatest businesses, right? Because a lot of them still have an air pocket to bridge here. So I think the market will be focused a little bit more on balance sheet than quarterly earnings, if I had to guess. And then financials is a great question. Look, there, honestly, the overall picture from my perspective hasn't changed in terms of where there's more or less relative attractiveness. I'd say Europe, much, much less to zero. In general, the U.S. a little bit more intriguing. Things were looking even bit better. But now, you know, on the margin, if you look at U.S. banks, you know, they had good things going for them in terms of turning the corner here. Some of them had specific one-off issues they could benefit from Wells Fargo, getting out from under the Fed's blanket, cutting costs again. Now they're being asked by the government to do a whole lot of things. And I think the story for the U.S. banks is better than the European ones, but it's a little bit pushed out now, unfortunately. And the good place still, though, that hasn't changed is emerging markets. I think there we have trimmed back on some of the weaker relative links just because we need the money for some of the other better businesses we want to upgrade to. It's nothing against the banks themselves. But the structural story in the emerging markets banks, I think, is still what it is. I think there's some really good high-quality institutions there, and there's a whole lot more of them relative than you get in the U.S. or in Europe by far. If that's short enough, sorry, I'd like to elaborate, but that kind of gives you in a nutshell around the world.
That's short enough.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Next question.
See, Barry, I didn't even have to move that fast. Sometimes my 30-minute answers are even better.
You have a follow-up from Steve Angeles.
Sure.
If no one else can ask you a question, I will.
Go for it.
So are you, take this with a grain of salt, but are you excited about what you see for the balance of this year, or are you very, very concerned?
Yeah, look, and this is where I constantly have to give an asterisk and a disclaimer before I answer this question to everybody, because, I mean, you can sense in my voice here today, and you've probably heard me before, I'm generally a pretty pumped up individual when it comes to investing and what we've got going on in front of me here. But look, I'm really stimulated by this current environment here right now. Why is that? But the asterisk being too as well, look, let's separate for a second the severity, the importance, the sensitivity to the healthcare issue, right? Let's put that aside. I'm extremely sensitive to that and dour about that issue. But from an investment perspective, yeah, I'm pretty pumped up here right now. Why is that, right? So, look, I have no crystal ball either, but if I would look at for a dislocation, you know, if I would go into the sort of Machiavellian laboratory of what could create investment opportunity, this is sort of what I would cook up a little bit. What do you want to dislocate the market? You want something that causes fear, right? And what causes fear more than something that's not just financial related, but it's health related, right? It's indiscriminate. There's no safety from it, right? What else would you want there? The fact that it's sort of shut down too, even the greatest high quality businesses, some of them in the near term causing some panic around them. You know, that's sort of what you want. At the same time, you know, it is something very serious. Don't get me wrong, but it isn't exactly Ebola either. Right? It's sparing a little bit of the younger and the very young, our children, where you get even a hyper sense of, you know, of fear, where you really get into the bunker, right? When you get to the really, 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 really young generation, I think everybody steps up their sensitivity even more because we're generally a forward-looking people as Americans, you know, for the next generation. But, you know, you have something here that's time definitive, right, to a degree. It has a time, it's going to run its course, and it could run its course hard. Don't get me wrong. And it's going to be disruptive. But it does run its course, even if you've left unabetted, right? Even if you just let it go, it runs its course, right? But we're trying to do better to manage that. And as they call it, as you know, and you've heard plenty of flatten the curve. The good news about it, too, is we've got something where we've seen a roadmap. So, you know, generally, sometimes you might feel like you're feeling around in the dark here. But we've seen China, and we've seen the epidemiological curve there. We've seen the economic curve there. Then we saw everybody get really scared about Korea, that it was going to just spiral out of control there next. And we've seen that go through it, right? And now we saw Italy in a similar situation where maybe now seemingly you're getting through it, but it looks, and it has been, don't get me wrong, from a human toll standpoint, been really bad. So we've got something that's scaring people, yet if we open our eyes, we've got a little bit of a roadmap to look at, right? So that to me is what's made this really interesting from an investment perspective. And at the same point in time, two of the biggest question marks you would have and you need to have as owners of assets and financial assets are what is the central bank going to do and what is the government going to do? And from the fiscal standpoint, right, we've had for years a government that was more or less on the sidelines to some degree in certain aspects, right? There were tax cuts, yes, that was good in this country, but now there's been even more in the kitchen sink thrown after it, and there's much less of the fight of who's good, who's bad, and the dithering around it. So the response is quick, it's large, and it seems like there's even willingness to follow through. European economies haven't done anything forever. The Germans have pointed their fingers at the South forever. The Germans are at the table now, right? So you've gotten everybody's head in the game here fiscally. Monetary policy, we had a playbook. We dusted it off and we put it in place even quicker than anybody would imagine. So now I'm sitting here as an equity investor looking at short rates where they are, which is more or less your opportunity cost, looking at what businesses are pricing at, looking at businesses specifically where the medium and long-term prospects for those businesses are still quite good, even if the next year's bad, even the next 2 years are bad, even the next 3 years are bad. Life does go on, and even back to global pandemic world, you know, world war situation. So we've got some patience there, certainly. So that's a lot of good stuff, right? I mean, starting to belabor the point. So you can see I'm interested in that. Now, look, I've been buying my own funds. I've been active here, right? Do I concede there could be another leg down here? Yeah, I've got no crystal ball there. And the pundits who throw that out there as a disclaimer, they could be right, they could be wrong. I don't know. Why don't I just sit around, though, and wait for that? Is because, as you know, you don't want to just sit and wait and try to pick the bottom because then you're probably apt to miss it and miss some of the big early recovery days off of it. So I'd rather be early here, early after already a downdraft down. So all this upgrading, the re-upping has come already after a correction back in prices. It's sort of reshuffled the deck for the developed markets, right? And particularly the U.S., where we've been on such a long, unending growth run here and stock compounding run here. Emerging, it's a little bit frustrating in that we were behind and we were about getting closer to get paid for our patients, and now we just have to wait a little bit longer, but it's still going to coil the spring further there. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to mean to sound glib from a health perspective, but from an investment perspective, I'm pretty clued in here. But look, it every week, you know, we evaluate the situation, right? As I said, the key issue for us is looking at these gaps, air pockets. Can even the best of companies gap this air pocket to the other side of what I'd say is a time-definitive situation? But the exact length of that is uncertain yet. I don't have the crystal ball for that, but I know it's within a range. So, you know, we just, you know, triple-check our facts every day and then keep pushing forward.
All right, great. If there's not another question, I'll just follow up and ask, you know, what are you most worried about outside of the coronavirus?
Yeah, look, I'm worried about the same generic thing everybody is, I think. You know, in that, look, I can give you my bullish stance here. But obviously, we don't know for sure what some of the knockoff impact is here, right? I think we're in really good shape so long as we have our ducks in a row here and we execute what's on the table with even a lot of wiggle room of accuracy, right? You know, this testing continues to ramp like it is in the U.S., you know, these epidemiological curves follow what they are. The liquidity, the fiscal that's been put in place fiscally is there, and even we have some room for extension potentially too. Not absolutely necessary. I think as long as the companies can bridge what still could be a wide gap, I think we're in good shape. You know, I think we're concerned about the same general thing that everybody is, that you just want to make sure we execute here, and you have to be concerned, right, because we're putting faith in government and people on executing, and that's the last position you generally always want to be in. But I think I'm giving them a lot of room for error. But if this drags on, and that it becomes not just this virus issue that's time definitive, but it rolls into other things, I think I'm also, as a lot of people are, watching that definitely, right? And that's why I'd say company by company, we're making sure we still have that length of bridge to get to the other side of the river. So nothing different in generic there, honestly. And then, look, on the emerging market, we got to watch these economies too, right? We always watch them very closely. I think we're in the much better structural ones, and I think they have the resiliency they're going to need. But, look, you got to watch them. It's the emerging markets too. So nothing new there.
Okay, well, I think with that we'll wrap it up, if that's okay. Matt, I want to thank you very much for your time today. I know all of you that are on the call, thinking about rebuilding equity positions given what's going on in the markets, and you want to address home bias and you want to offer clients managers that have posted superior risk-adjusted returns over multiple market cycles, Matt and the Von Tobel team have certainly done that. I want to thank you all for listening to the call. Virtus is committed to helping you get through these challenging times. We have an array of interesting information, client-approved, that can help you in educating and dialoguing with your clients. A replay of this call and the others in this series will be available in the Virtus Voices section of our website. For additional market commentary and portfolio-specific insights, please visit our website at virtus.com. If you have any additional questions or would like further information, please feel free to give us a call at 1-800-243-4361. That's 1-800-243-4361. Have a safe and terrific evening. Thanks, everybody.